Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Live from Frankie's Italian Kitchen in Richmond for a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow. This is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Philly cheesesteak pizza. Very, very good.
Very good?
Yeah, you've eaten half of it.
No, I took two pieces. And if you're not careful, I will eat more of it because it's phenomenal.
Is that a threat?
No, it's a fact, because I'm telling you, when I tell you everything is can't miss on this menu, but the more they keep bringing it out, you tell them you're going to push that back and say, I wouldn't get that again. No.
No.
It's all really, really, really phenomenal food.
You can get that today, too, for $9.75. Personal pizzas, $9.75, as long as ESPN 97.5 is here today. We'll be here till 3. The Wheelhouse will be here till 7. It is Lent season, so something to keep in mind for your Fridays coming up. Fish and chips, fried fish sandwich, also a crawfish pasta. The pizzas, the wings, the Italian food, all very good. The seafood has been really, really good as well. I mentioned last segment something that Nick Caserio can learn from Rafael Stone. Rafael Stone giving the interview, the one-on-one with Kelly Eco, where he's pretty transparent about, you know, what direction they're going in, what they want to see over the final 2025 games. He flat out said they don't care about wins and losses. They care more about the development of the young players, which, quite frankly, when you're not ready to be a playoff team, what do the win and losses matter? If you're not in the playoffs, who cares if you win 10 games? Who cares if you win 20 games?
If you don't win at all and you're a strong playoff team, you're a loser. It's just as simple as it gets. And we've talked about the most devastating thing for a franchise long-term is hovering in mediocrity. You're either really good or really bad. And that's how you can either get really good or you recycle quickly to try and get good again and get really bad.
And you can translate it to the NFL. What's the difference between 5 and 7 wins? Draft picks.
Yep.
That's it. Like, where you're at in the draft, quite frankly. Like, everybody was rooting for the Texans to lose in Week 18. Why? Because they wanted one fewer win. Why? Because they wanted the first pick of the NFL draft. So,
So
rewind.
So that they didn't have to consider giving up draft capital to get one spot where they had it completely blocked off from everybody else for the entire rest of the season.
And rewind 3 months ago. Where, oh, yeah, Texans need to win 7 games instead of 4. Okay. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Houston Dab King, Rafael and Caserio in the same breath is not something you like to hear. It's a fair point. It's a fair point.
I've been saying it forever and a day, but I think that of the two guys, you can find the little niches where you can say, he played that right.
Yeah.
He did that right. But overall, you're looking for big picture of he's doing it right on a day-to-day basis. I would argue that, you know, you can say that each guy with their shortcomings is enough that there are people out there that want them fired already. But
Both of them.
But you have to – because I've said, look, when we talk about the missteps of ownership and how just in big, complete disarray both owners have been, then you look at the first-time general managers trying to figure it all out on the fly and all the mistakes they made. First-time head coaches, multiple coaches, but the first time – a first-time head coach in Cully, Silas still surviving that, but still just barely treading water. And you're wondering, when is that going to change? And then you look at the rosters. That's where the Rockets have an advantage, but it's a smaller roster, as you've mentioned in the past. You're only worried about 12 guys as opposed to the full locker room of the NFL, and you realize, yeah, the Rockets are a little bit further along, but there's no guarantees that any of the guys that are currently on that roster are going to be the number one or number two guys on a successful playoff or championship caliber team. And the Texans are still trying to figure that out, starting with the most important position of quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can look at both organizations and see a lot of similarities between the two, quite honestly. From general managers on the hot seat, coaching hires that haven't gone as planned, building around a young foundation, and quite frankly being in a rebuild, although one's willing to admit it and one's not. Big C says the NFL is way different when it comes to losing games. Why? Like, what's the difference between an NBA team winning 15 games and 20 games versus what it is for the Houston Texans to win 5 games versus 7 games? How is that different? Because there's fewer of them? Because you're more invested in the one singular game per week? Because that's the only thing. So now you're putting your selfish interest of watching the games and having more interest in NFL versus NBA over the long-term ramifications of the organization.
Yeah, look, the only differences in the two, Clarence, are from the standpoint of if you embrace the suck wholeheartedly and fully, you can get the number one pick in the draft. In the NBA, you can embrace the suck, and you've got a percentage chance of getting the number one pick in the draft. But you're still going to get good players. You're still going to, you know, get the kind of players you need. But overall, there's no reward for being mediocre. There's no reward for, oh, I missed it by one game as opposed to three games, with the exception of the most important thing, which is you're trying to get the highest draft picks you can. I knew it was harsh when I said it. I knew people weren't on board and didn't want to like it. But they understand the concept now more because of what happened and how it transpired, and it took the last game of the regular season to figure it all out. Embracing the suck wholeheartedly and going in 100% will give you the best results. But even when you do it for 90% of the season, 95% of the season, if you screw up in week 18, look what it can cost you. It can cost you having your pick of the litter of anybody in this first round and every subsequent round, to having to trade up and figure out, well, what do we got to do to get the pick that we should have had all along?
But the thing that bothers me more than anything with that, though, is like people not having the foresight in week one. Because like everybody
changed.
There
was a lot of them. You remember it.
So many people changed their perspective. Oh, yeah, yeah, 7 wins. And then all of a sudden it's, oh, I don't want to win another. It's like, okay, well, you know, have a little bit of foresight. The things that you talked about with Rafael Stone, where he said, like, he quite frankly said they're going to add money in the offseason. They're going to have about $60 million under the salary cap, which is insane. Which, again, if you want to make the case that Rafael Stone was able to clear that money out, you can. And you can go back to the Harden trade, too, like getting expiring deals. Did he fall into that, potentially, but had expiring contracts? But the point that you brought up, where he said they're going to be super aggressive to be as good. He kind of talks out of both sides of his mouth here. He says we're going to be super aggressive to be as good as we can be next year with an eye of being even better in the future. And then he says we won't prioritize next year over the year after. So a little bit out of talking out of both sides of his mouth. But when you hear that he's going to be super aggressive to be as good as they can be next year, I don't know about you, Blankers, but the first thing that pops into my mind, the first person that pops into my mind,
13,
James Harden.
Yep. And that's what's scary. And I've done a little bit more research talking to people that I know to try and figure out. It is a Fertitta thing. It might be more Patrick than it is Tillman. But there still is love in the building for James Harden. And there is still people in the camp of we need to bring our guy back home, as opposed to what it could mean to derailing what they've done so far to build structurally a rebuild of a young roster of talent that could grow together. He's going to be the center of attention. He's going to demand the ball more, as much as he did previously. He's going to demand the most out of these young kids who might not be capable of understanding what he needs and doing what he wants, as opposed to a veteran-laden roster who knows the spots to go on the floor, who knows where he's going to throw them the ball, who knows how to make the plays that James wants you to make. Because James is real quick. He's real easy. He's got a great court vision. He is very good at passing the basketball. But if he passes it to you and you miss it or make the wrong decision, chances of you getting it again, slim and none.
Don't miss it.
That's right. Well, and
make
that's
the shot. Harden brings out the best in people.
So it's easier said than done. But from that perspective, that's a guy that could derail the entire rebuild. If you get the right veterans, if you get guys, and preferably in some cases, it's a guy that's already won a title. But now he likes the fact of, hey, I'm going to be in a position where, you know, I'm still young in my career. I've got guys around me that I can help. If I do my job correctly, it's not just about points and rebounds. If I do my job correctly and take these kids along with me, and we can add a couple more veterans here and there, now I can see this thing going in the right direction to get us to the next step on the pecking order of competing for a playoff spot or, you know, or solidifying a playoff spot. And then take it from there, as opposed to a guy that's never won one, that's expecting you to, you know, again, because of track record, hey, every time since I've been here, if I said I needed a guy, you went out and got me a guy. In a lot of cases, it was a big-time guy. I don't think they should be in that mode yet to go get big-time guys expecting to win overnight.
You're not going to always have that cap space, though.
It's like, true. That is true.
There's only a period of time whenever you have young players that you're eventually going to have to pay that you have the opportunity to be big spenders in free agency, and this might be that window. Like, this offseason might be that only window, maybe next year as well. But even with Stone talking out of both sides of his mouth here, One thing that I do like that he said is that he won't prioritize next year over the year after. So he realizes even though they want to be uber aggressive and like spin to try to make their team better next year, he's not going to sacrifice next season for the future of the organization, which again, turning it back to Caserio is something that scares me. Because I think if you were, like, I'd rather draft a quarterback in the third round, Hendon Hooker, than sign Jimmy Garoppolo, David Carr's brother, Derek. And the Texans haven't been linked to either once, thank goodness. Because I think a move like that, where you sign a mediocre middle-aged quarterback or trade number two for Dak Prescott, you're now prioritizing next year whenever your ceiling's like 8 wins, tops, maybe even like 6 or 7, over the years in the future.
But you're also doing yourself a favor because you're setting yourself up to be where you want to be at the end of the season, right? If you take young quarterbacks, you know they're going to make mistakes. You know that they're going to it's going to take some time to get comfortable, get their feet wet, understand the system. And even still, defenses are going to throw things at you that are going to completely catch you off guard, going to lead to turnovers, going to lead to issues on the win and loss department. That's exactly what you want if you don't draft a quarterback this year, because you want to be in the same position a year from now, and maybe you load up on defense, and maybe your defense shows improvement, and it shows the potential to be better as you get down the line. Now you can really focus on, hey, I have my pick of the litter of the three best quarterbacks in this draft. And after that, you know, Marvin Harrison Jr. is coming out, and all these other guys are coming out that maybe make more sense next year than this year, to where you still follow the plan, stay on the course, and there's a chance for you to still get better quicker. It might not be as quick as the fan base would like. It might take another couple of years. But once you get good, the sustainability and the percentages are in your favor of being able to win for a longer period of time than when you're trying to get that can't-miss solution of, hey, I see that there's four guys in free agency. Three of them really I don't like a lot. But if I go get them, I think for the next year or two, we could be better. Yeah. But how much better?
713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line for Kevin. Kevin, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's going on, Kevin?
Hey, how you guys doing? I hope the Rockets listen to Joel Blank, because he's spot on. Here's why. I don't want James Harden back here in Houston. I think this offseason is very important for Rafael Stone. He has to get two things right. One, he has to get the right head coach in here, too. I would go along the lines of Joel's plan, which is bringing in key veterans that knows how to win, that will build a culture of winning, and on the flip side of that, know how to lead these young kids in winning. So up until this point, Rafael Stone has been good, but this offseason is very key. Getting the right coach, not going in the direction of James Harden. The only way, guys, I would bring Harden back to Houston is there's a guarantee he's bringing another superstar with him to pair along and to, go along with the young core. Thank you guys for taking my call. I will continue to listen. You guys are doing a great job.
Well, he's bringing back Durant with him. That's the rumor on the streets.
Well, that was the rumor on certain streets that led to dead ends. the key to me is you're blowing up your entire rebuild if you're trying to go out and get two franchise players. And I don't know where the second one's coming from, and you need to come up with all the money to be able to do that. But the interesting point that he brings up that you and I have kind of talked about in the past, which is he's got to do what Caserio kind of did, but even further. Caserio had his way with an inexperienced David Culley that was happy to be there. He was on the headsets. He was at practice. He was doing everything he was doing. This is all the things we're hearing about what Stone's doing with Silas. Stone has to realize, in order for this team to grow, he has to grow too and trust that I'm going to bring in a veteran that's been through more and knows more than I do from the X's and O's and basketball side of it, and I'm going to get out of his way so that he can coach this team and do the things that this young squad needs, as opposed to me acting like I know it all, telling everybody what to do and where to go when I'm still learning myself in my first years as a general manager.
I will say this is like I'm still on the fence with Harden, and I'm much more in okay with the idea about Harden than you are. The biggest priority is to find the right head coach.
No question.
That is the biggest priority this offseason, outside of the lotto.
And now you got to watch Atlanta real carefully, because there's a lot of guys like a Kenny Atkinson and like the guy that I liked and we both liked a lot in Quinn Snyder. Those type of guys, younger coaches that come with a resume that says instant respect, won on certain levels, coached different aged players, got success when teams didn't have all the talent in the world. That's the kind of thing you need. And a guy that understands from the way that he was brought up and raised in the game, This works, this doesn't. General managers don't interrupt practice. They don't stop coaches working with kids. They don't tell people in film sessions what they should be doing. They let those guys do their job while I do mine, which is to put the best roster together and gather the best draft picks and players so that you can do your job better.
Brian McTaggart, 20th year on the Astros beat, covers the Astros for MLB.com, the one and only. Brian McTaggart joins the Killer Bees next on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, I want to tell you about my good friend Doc Linville. I've been telling you and just raving about Doc Linville for a long time. So have so many other of my colleagues. The fact of the matter is it's because Doc Linville does his job. And in my opinion, he does it better than anybody else. It's the NeoGraft procedure that he specializes in that I'm such a fan of. He does it locally here in Houston. And simply put, he gives you your hair back. It is your own hair. It is not someone else's hair. It is not a toupee. It is not sprays and creams and foams and all the things that don't work. They just mask the problem. It's your own hair. Genetically, you're never going to lose the hair on the sides and the back of your head. So what Doc Linville does is he takes some of it, puts it where you need it. Maybe you got a baboon's butt that keeps showing up on the top of your head, and you don't think there's anything to do but put a hat on it. No, if you do the NeoGraft procedure, you get your hair back, and it covers it all up. Your forehead has become an 8-head. Well, you can get it back to your old hairline with the help of Doc Linville and the NeoGraft procedure. Check him out, because as a listener of ESPN 97.5, you get a free consultation with Doc Linville and his staff. It normally costs $150. For you, it's absolutely free. Go to 975hair.com. Set up the consultation. Ask all the questions. How long does the procedure take? What's the financing options? When will I see a full head of hair again? All those different things can be answered. The one that got me, 95%+ of every follicle moved stays and grows and is with you for the long haul. That's why I did it. That's why you should too. Check them out today, 975hair.com. Go see my friend Doc Linville.
This is a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from Frankie's Italian Kitchen in Richmond. This is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Let's go straight out to the HRNP listener line, being joined by Brian McTaggart, Go Cougs, 20th season as the Astros beat reporter for MLB.com. Tags, we'll talk about the Astros in just a second, but how much fun are you watching the number one team in the country play basketball?
Oh, it's great. I made a point to watch the game last night after I got back from dinner. So, had fun watching it. Hated I wasn't there at the Fertitta Center, but I am popping home for a couple of days next week just in time for the Wichita State game. And then, hopefully I'll see him again in the Final Four. But it's been a magical season. I've pretty much caught every game that I have, which is almost all of them. And hopefully there's a bunch more.
Brian, look, appreciate you always coming on the show, and as I always say, the best follow if you're looking for Astros insight and information on a daily basis. We're interested now because of the fact that we got down to almost to the spoiled fan perspective of this team has so much, they're so loaded, that you start talking about, as opposed to teams that have holes to fill, where could this team falter? And the easy answer for is injuries, and we've seen them already with McCullers, with Yordan. Some people have lost their minds on it. Other people said nothing to see here. What do you think and what do you make of so far the severity and what we possibly could be dealing with in terms of windows in a Yordan and a McCullers?
Yeah, with McCullers, I think it's just a little more worrisome if you're the Astros, just because he has a recent history of elbow problems. And if you remember last year when he came back and he talked about his recovery, he said at some point that he considered having surgery, decided to rehab it. And so whatever that issue was, he decided to have surgery. That's still lingering. So just with his history, I think, you just have to wonder how long this is going to linger. Lance said yesterday that he wants to pitch, 150, 160 innings. I'm not sure, if he's going to be able to do that or not. The Yordan thing's weird because he had hand problems last year with both hands, and no one really tells us what it is or how it happened, and I guess there doesn't seem to be any kind of fix for it. So I guess it's just something that they're going to have to deal with. And I certainly think he's going to be swinging the bat here before too long. Of the two, I think McCullers, just with his history, has probably got to be the most concerning.
Yordan just seems it's just annoying. Like, if it's not severe enough to have surgery, it's just something that's going to be sticking around the course of his career. Brian McTaggart covers the Astros for MLB.com, joining us on the HRMP listener line. One of the priorities, it seems, for new general manager Dana Brown is to sign some players. He's already signed one, Christian Javier, getting the five-year extension. Of course, James Click, maybe his best act as an Astro general manager, signing Yordan Alvarez last year. What other extensions could potentially be on the horizon for Dana Brown and the Houston Astros?
Yeah, well, he's been pretty open and mentioned what he wants to do, which has been really refreshing, I think, from a reporter's point of view. And, you know, he's mentioned that he's talked to Scott Boras about Jose Altuve and Alex Bregman, both of whom are up, you know, after 2024, so they got 2 years left. You know, Framber Valdez and Tucker, Kyle Tucker, obviously, are two cases that they would like to get done. Tucker just doesn't seem real motivated at this point to get a deal done. I think they're going to try to sign him as hard as they can this during the spring. And then if that doesn't work, then probably turn their attention a little bit more to Valdez at that point. But just the fact that I think Tucker's been offered a couple of deals so far, you know, he ended up going to arbitration with them, and you could tell when he came to camp that he wasn't really happy about that. You know, what kind of bad blood does that leave? But so it wouldn't surprise me at all if he plays out the final 3 years and goes to arbitration. I mean, he still does have 3 years left, so that's a long time. You know, and the thing about Javier is he doesn't have the track record of both of those guys. So I think it was a little easier to get a deal done with him, where you roll the dice a little bit if you're the Astros and Javier gets some early security in his career. But you know, Tucker and Valdez are both all stars, both coming off great years, so they have a little bit more, I guess, sizzle to try to get a deal done on their end, because their resume is a little better at this point.
Brian, talking about the positives with this team and where you could see another jump, we know that, and we've talked about maybe not a negative, but something that we need to warn the fans about. Look, the ERA and the way that the bullpen and the starting pitchers pitched last year, they could be almost as good again, but those numbers probably aren't going to be the same, and that's something they got to be prepared for. But on the plus side, how much is this team going to benefit from the no shift and the new shift rules, especially with some of the left-handed hitters that are in the middle of this lineup?
Yeah, that's the thing. The Astros' two biggest run producers look like they're going to be the two left-handed hitters, and Alvarez and Tucker, and you know, how many times did those guys hit the ball right into right field and somebody was standing there? That being said, talking to both of them, they were both like, well, also, you know, hit some dribblers through the infield that probably would have been outs routinely. But I think both will, if we look at the numbers at the end of the year, I think they will stand the benefit from the shift being gone. I think as far as defensively, when the Astros, I mean, they were kind of in the forefront of shifting, you know, 10 years ago with the Rays. And a guy like Altuve now has done that for the majority of their career. The good thing for them is they have a really athletic shortstop who has really good range, who can make a lot of plays. You know, he's still going to be making plays behind the bag. I think we'll still see him lined up close to second base. And, you know, once the ball's pitched, you know, try to get on the other side of the base and make some plays, because, you know, Altuve's range isn't great. But Pena's just so athletic out there and so rangy, I think, that they shouldn't have any problem, I think, as far as the shift, as far as the bigger bases. I'm anxious to see this. Are they going to run more now they have fewer pickoffs? There's just so many things this year when games start. I can't wait to see how teams take advantage of it or how they get exposed. But, you know, the Astros are going to be on top of that and try to get everything out of every one of those rules changes.
It could magnify the importance of a catcher who can throw, too, like Martin Maldonado. Brian McTaggart joining us on the HRNP listener line. I wanted to go back to the McCullers conundrum, I guess, because who knows how long he's going to be out. We're just guessing. We do know, though, he's not going to be up with the club on opening day, which opens a job for somebody else. If you assume that the Astros carry 13 pitchers, which I think we all assume that they will. I know Dana Brown had some comments about how he liked the Astros using a six-man rotation last year. He felt that it kept the pitching staff fresh. Whereas Atlanta, not so stretched whenever they entered the postseason. Is it possible for the Astros to still use a six-man rotation whenever they break camp opening day, even without Lance McCullers?
I just don't think it's likely. If you look at, I mean, if you look at their rotation right now, it's Valdez, Javier, Urquidy, Garcia, and Brown. I mean, I think that's pretty clear cut. So what's the next wave beyond that? You know, Brandon Belak. You know, he's a guy I think they're going to get stretched out. I think Brown really likes him to be a guy you could put at the back of the rotation. And then you're looking at prospects who haven't pitched in the big leagues, like J.P. France, who was put on the 40-man roster. So there's just not the pitching depth that they had last year to go beyond the five starters. So I just don't see it. I mean, they come out of the gate with, I think, like 8 or 9 games in a row. So that would be a good time to do it because they don't have, you know, days off like you normally do early in the season. So, but I, you know, maybe they do have Belak in there as a guy that can do long relief and a start, because I did, you know, what you said about Dana Brown. We were in his office yesterday, and I thought that was very interesting that he thought that worked out really well for the Astros last year, having a 6-man rotation, which it did. And then he lamented how in Atlanta in 2021 they ran out of pitching, or 2022, sort of like the Astros did in 2021. And he just thought that a 6-man rotation was just the way to go. So I think we'll see it at some point with the bodies. Certainly when McCullers comes back and you get into the meat of the summer, I can see them doing that for sure. You know, I'm just not so sure they have the arms to do that right out of the bat.
Brian, what are you looking at in terms of any surprises or anybody that could, like, get from the two positions that I would think that are most under the microscope are going to be center field and catcher. And with what we talked about with the rules changes and the importance of a Martin Maldonado, but also from the standpoint of how he manages a pitching staff in game, I look at Diaz and I look at Lee and I go, is there a chance that they could trade for a veteran catcher as a backup just because of how important on this team having a stable veteran behind the plate could be for this pitching staff? And then the second part of that is in center field. Is Jake Meyers going to finally be healthy and mentally and physically be able to be the guy that they expected him to be when he made the fast track to the majors?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they'll acquire a catcher right now. I mean, they seem committed to finding out what Lee and Yainer Diaz can bring to the plate and then going into the season with them. But would not shock me at all if they get halfway through the season and realize if Maldonado gets hurt, we need that veteran back there. I mean, they traded a couple of times for Maldonado in that situation, and then Castro last year as well. I mean, it's really critical, I think, to have a veteran catcher. So that's going to be something to monitor. If I had to put money on it, I would say by the time August rolls around, there will be another catcher on this roster just for depth purposes, just a guy who's done it before and been around the block and can handle some veterans. But I think they really want to see which one of these two young guys can step up. Diaz can play first, which helps him out a little bit. Lee's got the better arm, and which is going to be, I think, as Jeremy was saying, with the shorter bases now, it's probably going to be a little bit more important. The Astros always prioritize controlling the running game anyway. As far as center field, I mean, believe it or not, Dusty Baker said some nice things about Chaz McCormick yesterday. We all know he's not been exactly a guy who's been a champion of Chaz McCormick, but McCormick just keeps coming back and getting the job done when they need it. But talked to Meyers a little bit yesterday. He seemed like he was in a way better frame of mind than he's been mentally. He said physically he feels better than he has in a couple of years. So, you know, let's find out what he can do. Justin Durden, a minor league guy who's here in camp, so another guy I think he's going to be in the big league at some point who can really hit. So they have options in center field. I mean, if it's not going to be McCormick every day, which, you know, he might be playing some in left field a little bit while Brantley's out, they have options. But, you know, Meyers is going to have to perform and show he's completely healthy and that, you know, he can make strong and accurate throws to the plate. And then, you know, a guy like Justin Durden might get a shot as well.
One real quick one, McTaggart, before we let you go. I want to use your money again to bet on who's around come opening day. Michael Brantley, if you had to bet your money on it, is he on the active roster come opening day?
I would say no, because he's on the schedule, and he says if there's no setbacks, but it seems like there's always like a setback or two. So I say no, but not deep into the season. I think he'll be back at some point shortly after opening day.
Tags, we appreciate you coming on. I hope you're enjoying the Florida sun, and look to catch up very soon.
Yeah, sounds good. Thanks, guys.
It's Brian McTaggart, covers the Astros beat for MLB.com. 20 years on the Astros beat. Go Cougs. And the very
honorary
best in the business.
Too.
Yes.
He's a loyal.
Yes, he is. All right, let's react to some of what we had to say. If no Brantley on opening day, then what? 5-man, 6-man rotation. Let's get into some of the extension talk as well. Kyle Tucker, look, I don't think an extension is possible with Kyle Tucker, if I'm being quite honest. 713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees broadcasting live from Frankie's Italian Kitchen on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
I want to tell you right now about the good people at Apollo Men's Health. Look, I've been telling you about Apollo Men's Health because they make a difference on a daily basis for the people that you care about the most, who are the most important, and how much energy factors in. If you have low energy, you don't have the get up and go, it's got up and went, you don't think you can get it back. For both men and women, you can. And it starts with hormone therapy that's administered at Apollo Men's Health. You can have the many different ways it's administered, from going into the clinic weekly to having and learning the ways that you can get it done at the house and they get you the product, to cutting-edge pellet testosterone therapy, which is where you only have to go in every 6 months, but you get the energy on a daily basis. They are phenomenal at taking care of their patients because they care. Go to ApolloMH.com right now and see all the different services they offer and all the different ways that they could possibly help. You see a couple of those things that might be able to help you, make an appointment. And once you do, when you make that appointment, you'll find out that most major insurance is accepted. Discounts for military personnel, first responders, all the ESPN listeners. If you mention my name, Joel Blank, when you go in there, you get a free B12 shot or a free body composition analysis on your first official visit. Let the process go from there. Answer the questions honestly. Tell them where you're lacking. Tell them where you'd like to improve. They'll put you on a plan that works. They'll get you the results you need. They're good people doing things on a daily basis the way they're supposed to be done, with you on their minds first and foremost. Check them out today. They're the good people at Apollo Men's Health.
This is a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from Frankie's Italian Kitchen in Richmond. This is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
One of the things I found interesting, love to talk with Brian McTaggart, Go Cooks, 20 years covering the Astros, beat at MLB.com, has feet on the ground out there in West Palm Beach, Florida. So he knows everything that's going on out there. I'm a little surprised, maybe I shouldn't be, the Brantley opening day thing. And it's not so much because of Brantley, because I agree with you, like, they should take it easy with Brantley. There's no sense rushing him back. Here we go falling into the trap where we think the Astros have it easy the whole regular season. They're going to run away with the American League West. And, like, I mean, it's more important to have him healthy at the end of the year than the beginning of the year. Now, you do throw in his contract, which incentivizes him for playing in games, which is kind of weird for an older guy coming off of an injury, that you want to provide him incentives for playing in games whenever you really want to keep him healthy. The thing that sticks out to me, though, is, look, you're going to keep 13 players on this opening day roster. Like, I don't know who's going to be the replacement for Michael Brantley if Michael Brantley is not on this opening day roster, because it's already going to carry Mauricio Dubon. It's already going to carry David Hensley. It's already going to carry both center fielders and Chaz McCormick and Jake Myers. Like, I'm not sure who the natural fit is to be that 13th position player if Michael Brantley's not on the opening day roster.
I mean, do you think that they'd look outside?
No, I don't.
I don't either, because I think that it's just a matter of time. It's not a gap to fill that you don't see any kind of solution coming. You know that Uncle Mike's going to be there. It's just, you know, we talked about this previously to this even being something that might be on the table now, because the reality is he might need a little bit more time. And that is, you have the luxury of having a team and a lineup that's capable, but in the short term, you do have questions in terms of how do you replace him defensively and then offensively. And like we talked about, even from a lineup perspective, if it's Uncle Mike you're moving around, it's one thing. If you're moving other guys around, maybe it changes things a little bit. But I think that the mainstay that we've both been on the same page with is, it doesn't matter what you do in April. You don't win World Series in April. You win them when the playoffs are on the line and the games matter the most. That's when you need a healthy Brantley. And so you don't have to rush him back. But it does behoove you to ask the question, what are you going to do until he is back 100%? And who gets those looks?
The options on the 40-man roster, you're looking at Bly Madris, who is a 4A player that the Astros traded for or claimed off waivers, I can't remember, in the offseason. Joe Perez, who's he? Ryland Bannon, who is he?
Taggart mentioned the good bat in center field.
Durden, but he's not on the 40-man yet. They would have to make a move to put him on the 40-man. He's an up-and-comer. He's somebody who hit really well for most of last season. I know a lot of people like him quite a bit, so I've heard a lot of people say keep an eye on him. Ryland Bannon's on the 40-man roster. I don't know who that is. J.J. Matijevic is somebody that we saw last year. Maybe he could fill in for Brantley for a couple weeks.
Yesterday he was taking balls in the outfield.
See, that might be why he's taking balls in the outfield.
Yep, yep.
Like, we need a dude that could potentially play left field. I think the other options, you keep both Diaz and Lee on the 26-man roster until Brantley comes back, because Diaz gives you first base flexibility. We saw Brantley taking ground balls at first base. This team doesn't have a backup first baseman if Brantley and Diaz aren't on the team. I don't think Hensley's a first baseman. And then Corey Lee gives you a little bit of position flexibility. I think in an emergency he could play a little bit of left field.
Would you rather go that route and try and find someone like that, or are you more comfortable putting Chaz in left and putting Jake in center and saying those guys have at least had, you know, extended time from a starting lineup,
yes. But I'm talking about the 13th guy on the roster off the bench.
Well, look, in all of the bench players, versatility is the biggest key to why they're so important and why Dusty likes them so much. It's a Dubon that can play infield, outfield. It's the same thing when you had Diaz in the past and other guys that can give you multiple position flexibility. And if you take a guy like Jiner Diaz, and he's a guy that can play catcher, he can play first base, and you get him a little bit of experience in the outfield, you know, he doesn't have to do a whole lot to be as good as Michael Brantley defensively. And or Yordan Alvarez. He's got a good arm in Yordan Alvarez, but he doesn't cover a whole lot of ground. So you just need corner outfielders that aren't going to hurt you defensively, but can help you offensively more so than doing what you're doing.
And like you said, they're probably not going to start many games. Like
right.
if Brantley's out for 3 weeks to start the year to make sure he's completely 100%, I mean, you're probably talking at most like 3 to 5 starts.
Dusty's platooned enough in his managerial career, too, and he likes to give rest as much as he does to where he can maneuver the lineup for 3 weeks, and they should be able to be fine. But for the long haul, you want Mike back, and then when Uncle Mike comes back, now you've got a really strong bench that gives you another leg up on most of the competition.
713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRP listener line for Carl. Carl, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's up?
Hey, thanks, fellas. I missed most of tag. Dadgummit, I got to work.
ESPN 97.5.
Podcast, buddy, podcast.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think Brantley will be on the opening day roster. I don't know how much he'll play early on, but I think he'll be there. But two quick questions. Did I hear that we still have Tucker for 3 years? And my second question is, Yuli, what's the status? I mean, everybody loves Yuli, and he can play both corners.
Appreciate the call, Carl. Tucker has this year and two more left on his rookie deal. First 3 years are, you know, MLB minimum. The final 3 years are arbitration. You can get into the weeds with the Super 2, that sort of stuff, blah, 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 blah. But, yes, he's under club control this year and then two more. So there's really not a lot of urgency to re-sign Kyle Tucker. I quite frankly don't think they're going to re-sign Kyle Tucker before this contract is up. They tried last year. It didn't get done. They said they were going to try this offseason. It didn't get done. They've already disagreed on one, the contract extension a year ago. Then they disagreed again in arbitration. They were $2.5 million apart. Now, look, Dana Brown and Jim Crane could walk in and be like, hey, Kyle Tucker, I know that you're upset with us in the arbitration thing, but we'll meet all your demands, and then Kyle Tucker will immediately sign on the bottom line. Like, you can forgive very quickly whenever somebody else meets your demands. So I'm not worried about them being far apart on arbitration as, like, the deal breaker here. But quite honestly, like, Americans usually aren't the ones that sign these contract extensions that buy them out of their free agent years.
Well, but also from the standpoint of Tucker, look, I think he's handled it like a professional first and foremost. He's not like Corbin Burns. He didn't go off the deep end and take everything personally and understand that in arbitration hearings, you're going to hear some things you don't want to hear because they're trying to win their arbitration. They're not trying to make you happy. They're trying to save money. And in, especially like a franchise like Milwaukee, they're trying to do things that they need to do for the bottom line. The Astros don't have to do that. They chose to do it with Tucker. But at the same time, when you hear the interview with Tucker coming out of that, he still says he loves putting on that uniform every day. He loves the guys in this locker room. He loves playing for this team and this organization because he can understand it better, because he understands there is a bigger picture for him, and there's going to be a day when he does get his payday. It may not be with the Astros, because I believe the same things you do. Look, he's going to get the same kind of advice from his agents as he's been getting all along, which is, sure, it's fine, Yordan wanted to jump at that, but you don't have to. And if you keep doing what you've been doing, you're on a path and trajectory where you're going to completely surpass what Yordan made, and you are going to make a whole lot more for a longer period of time. Now, the caveat is you got to be willing to go somewhere else because there's a chance the Astros aren't going to do that, and we know their philosophy on long-term deals and the big money. But for the long and the short term, because of the fact that even in the short term with arbitration, he's going to get paid. But if he's looking for that big monster payday, it's depending on where the team is at that time and who else is going to be on the market, there's a good chance that he's not going to be an Astro at that time.
713-780-3776. Back to the HRP listener line. Steven, you're in the Hive for the Killer Bees. What's up, Steven?
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Great.
So I don't know if this was mentioned before because when I got on, it kind of cut out. But what about adding Drew Gilbert? To the roster. to kind of like get some playing time for if Brantley's out.
Appreciate the call. We talked about this the other day. It's been – look, Dana Brown sent a message, and he sent a message that you need to be ready sooner rather than later. Your chance may be coming, but I don't think it's this soon. I don't think he's ready for it. I don't think that they're in a position where they need to rush him, and I don't think that the time is right now. You may differ, but I think for the most part we're on the same page. He's just too young and raw, and he's still learning about professional baseball as opposed to college baseball, getting his feet wet, understanding pitching, doing all the things he needs to do. Dana Brown basically is saying, hey, look, we like you. I have a reputation with young players of taking care of them. Just be ready for your moment. When it comes, make sure you take advantage of it because there could be an opportunity for you, but it's not now.
Way too soon. He's played in 10 professional games after he got drafted last year out of Tennessee. 4 of those in rookie ball, 6 of those in single-A ball before he got hurt, that really bad injury. So, way too soon with Drew Gilbert. It's probably too soon to like figure out a plan for him to be on this year's team. Now, you can see a scenario that exists where Drew Gilbert could be like a fall call-up, maybe a September call-up, where you know Jake and Chaz are struggling. Maybe you strike out of the trade deadline. Drew Gilbert just tearing up the minor leagues, and it's like, okay, let's give Gilbert a shot to see if he can be our best center fielder whenever you go into the postseason. But far too soon, and the secondary conversation to have here, too, is you don't want to start his clock before it's too soon. Because like we're talking with Kyle Tucker, they still have this year and 2 more years. Like we talk about George Springer, even though a lot of people were mad, they called up George Springer too late, which is silly. Do you want George Springer on a bad team? Do you want George Springer on a good team? I rest my case. It's far too soon for Drew Gilbert. He needs more seasoning, and you don't want to start his clock before, quite frankly, he's ready to win a starting job.
But I'll tell you where else it makes sense from a late-season call-up. Even if those guys aren't struggling, same thing they did with Pena. They've done it with so many other guys. Give them a taste. Give them a taste of what it's like when the games mean the most. Give them a taste all the way back to the Yankees documentaries on Jeter. When Jeter wasn't yet a guy, but he was on his way to being a guy, they took him along for the ride so that he could experience, you know, the in-game adjustments, the level of pressure that goes with every game and every play, and understand what it feels like to be in that moment. So you're better preparing your young players as much as possible so when it is their turn, that nothing surprises them and catches them off guard.
713-780-ESPN. Let's get into that 5-man, 6-man rotation conversation and the whole Christian Javier, like why they signed Javier to the contract extension, mentioning the not as long a track record. So does that become attractive for some other Houston Astro extension candidate? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees from Frankie's Italian Kitchen on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
No.
One of the things I got to tell you about is HRMP, Human Resources and Payroll. It is the very, very best. Cougar, owned by my colleague, Go Cougs, used to protect Heisman Trophy winners. Now he wants to protect you and your business. HRMP, members of the Cougar 100, shows you how prestigious they are. You've seen the HRMP signage, the U of H games. You've seen their beautiful building off the Beltway. And business owners, let HRMP help you. They can help in a variety of different areas. HR compliance, benefits administration, payroll, onboarding. Are you getting tired of those things? Are you getting tired of compliance, benefits administration, payroll, onboarding? Well, HRMP can take it off your plate. That way you can spend your time, energy, and effort back in building your business. No box with HRMP. Doesn't matter how small, doesn't matter how big, HRMP will find a way to help. They'll completely customize a plan for what you or your business needs. And they do it in a way that's unique. Technology meets service. They have the best tech. You'll love that, but you'll also love their service. Guaranteed fulfillment. You won't be talking to a stranger in a call board. You'll be talking to someone who knows you and your business needs. We use HRMP at Gal Media, and every time I have a question, I have a lot of them, I always get a quick answer and an answer that's easy to understand. So employers, help out your employees. Give them a call right now, 281-880-6525, and let HRMP customize a plan for you, 281-880-6525, or check them out at HRP.net. That's HRP.net.
You're listening to a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from Frankie's Italian Kitchen in Richmond. This is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Oh, this place is awesome. Frankie's Italian Kitchen, the very best. The pizza, the nachos, the fish and chips. It is Lent season after all. Everything's been great. I'm in love with the wings. I am a wing snob. I am a wing aficionado. These are the best that I have in the Houston area. Like, these are fantastic. I'm in love with these wings.
And the funny thing is, but it's not funny, it's real. You just add something else to the list where you say, There's another thing that's really good. I was telling Clarence when he came here and he was raving about the
raving about the
Cajun pasta. And I was like, man, it's like I always tell people, and I'm not making it up. When you're sitting at a table and you see someone order something at the table next to you and you go, God, it looks fantastic. Next time I'm here, I'm going to have to get that. Because every single thing you choose on the menu is a home run. It's absolutely fantastic. Even guys that you want to dislike because they're wearing Yankees hats, they come in here because they know that just like the Astros are better than the Yankees, the food is better here than anywhere else. Even in New York, when you're talking about a guy like Sinatra, it's named after him, but the food is better because it's here. You can get it. Frankie's Italian Kitchen's awesome.
Yeah, it is the very best. We'll get into the Astros talk in just a moment. 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRP listener line, though. Justin's in the Hive. Justin, you're in the Hive for the Killer Bees. What's up?
What's going on, guys? I got a little bit of a loaded question, and it's in reference to Brandon Cooks. I'm just wondering why his value is so low. Like, I did some research this morning, and it's a weak free agency class for receiver. There's not really a top-flight receiver in the draft this year, and not to mention, like, receivers are getting traded for max value recently. I mean, you look at guys like Kadarius Toney and Claypool are going for third- and second-round picks. Not to mention, like, Brown, Hill, Adams, all these guys going for one-plus. It just doesn't make sense to me why we wouldn't be able to get, at minimum, a late second when the receiver position as a whole is inflated right now. Like, everybody's after getting multiple receivers on their team. If we eat some of the salary and Corny Cal agrees to pay off some of it, why couldn't we get at least a late second for him?
I think you kind of answered your own question a bit there, Justin, is that it is more about the contract. Brandon Cooks is a football player, is still a good football player. Now, did he go backwards a bit last year? That's something you can't argue. He absolutely did. He took a step back in terms of his production. Part of it was his own doing, pouting, quitting on his team several different times, snapping off his helmet was him. What he did, like, on Twitter, like, I don't put much stock in people putting things on Twitter, especially players, like, whatever. Like, I don't care about somebody's social media, the players. Whenever he walked off the field in Chicago after Davis Mills threw an interception and just, took off his chin straps and walked to the sideline while the play was still going on, to me was inexcusable. I did not like that whatsoever. Yet they still brought Brandon Cooks back and let him play for some reason. It was critical in that Week 18 win against the Colts. He had a good game against the Colts. Now, what he mentioned about the wide receiver market right now, in free agency, things like that, and he is right. Receivers are a position of demand. The wide receiver market's not good. It could be the biggest benefactor for the Houston Texans, actually, because the contract for Brandon Cooks, like, he's got a $34 million dead cap this year. That's significant. That is troublesome. That's part of the reason that the value is lower. Now, like, what his value is, like, we've talked about it. Like, if you can get a third, I would gladly do that. I've mentioned a top 125 pick. I would gladly do that. I wouldn't do it for a sixth-rounder. Maybe because the free agency market is as bad as it is as the wide receiver position. Because there is high demand for wide receivers now more than ever in the NFL, maybe that can offset the bad contract that Brandon Cooks is on. Maybe that can offset the drop in production from Brandon Cooks this season versus 2 years ago. If you can get me into that top 125 pick range, I'd be happy with Brandon Cooks being off of this team.
Look, I think for all the reasons you touched on, the value's not going to be as high as he wants it to be. But I think that the other thing that factors in is I think that there's a conception, whether it's a misconception or not, we'll find out now with new people in the locker room from a head coach perspective, but Nick Caserio's still there. I feel like a lot of teams in the league feel like they have to do something with him now, so they're not going to have to overspend because he's the wrong fit for a variety of reasons. Whether you believe in from social media to the media sessions to the not practicing to not talking to all the different things he's done. You're right, and we've gone over the stats and the fact that he still will put his helmet on Sundays for the most part. But he's also a little older. He's been through a lot of teams. He's been through a lot of situations, and that contract also doesn't help him. So that you look at it, and from a lot of teams' perspective, they're like, well, they're doing a total rebuild. Let's see what they do first. Maybe they're going to cut him. Maybe they're going to be willing to take a whole lot less because they just want him out of the building. It's a bad fit. He wants to win. They're not ready to win yet. So I don't think it's realistic to look for a second or third round pick from that regard as well. If they can get anything for him in the range you're talking about, right now I would take that. I think there might come a point, and I don't know, and I did talk to some people after you and I talked about this the last time, that say that there really is some truth to the fact that he's still trying to figure out if he wants to be here, because at the end of the season he said he didn't want to be part of a rebuild. And they're trying to figure out if they still want him around with all the young kids that they've brought in and they continue to bring in. And that'll factor in as well to where how low is the basement before they say, this is where I'm selling at. Yeah. And it remains to be seen. But I think the days of hoping to get a second, he's not the guys that you're talking about that brought even a Tony was so young. The ceiling was still high, and he showed it in the playoffs for the Kansas City Chiefs. I think that those days are over for him being a true wide receiver, one that's going to command, you know, the type of picks that you were looking for.
I'd like to hire Justin as my sales guy, because that's the best sales pitch that you can give for Brandon Cooks having any sort of value on the trade market in the NFL. Now, a couple of things that he did bring up. I am a huge proponent of Cheesy Cow, as he called him. I call him Cool Cat Cow. I'm a big proponent of them using money to buy out some of the Brandon Cooks contract to create a higher demand in terms of his trade value. So maybe you can buy out a significant piece of his contract where he turns in from a fifth rounder to a third rounder. I'm a huge fan of that. You use money to buy draft picks, basically. Tillman Fertitta did that at the trade deadline, where he flat out bought some second round draft picks. I think, three or four of them, spending some money to buy some lottery tickets late in a draft. Also, like, maybe there's a scenario out there for Nick Caserio, kind of again like Rafael Stone. Maybe Caserio can be under the tutelage of Rafael Stone. What did Rafael Stone do at the trade deadline with a contract that wasn't great? Yes, it's expiring, so it makes it easier to move. But a player who's been difficult to trade for the Rockets was Eric Gordon. What can you get for Eric Gordon? Maybe there was a day when he could have been worth the first-round pick. Well, you didn't make that trade whenever it existed. You have to, you know, figure out what's in the best interest for your organization going forward, even though you might have missed on a previous time to trade him, like Eric Gordon. Like Brandon Cooks, their value was at its highest when the Texans and Rockets general managers decided not to trade them. But Rafael Stone, I thought, did a good job with Eric Gordon, coupling a late first rounder with Gordon to move up potentially like 10, 12, 14 spots in the first round of the draft. I think it makes some sense, because we talk about the Houston Texans already having a dozen draft picks. I don't think Nick Caserio is going to want to draft 12 players and have 12 rookies on this football team. I think it makes a lot of sense to couple like a fifth, sixth round pick with Brandon Cooks to try to move to the third round. I want a top 125 pick for Brandon Cooks. If you're telling me I can't get a top 125 pick for Brandon Cooks, okay, well, what does my sweetener have to be to get into that range? Is it a sixth rounder? Okay, I'll put Cooks and a sixth rounder together to move into the top half of the fourth round.
Well, I agree with you. It's all about your threshold, right? Where are your levers? Where are you willing to go to get where you want to be with Brandon Cooks or getting rid of Brandon Cooks? If it's just, I got to get rid of him, that's one thing. But if you're trying to actually get something of value for him, instead of thinking first or second or third round pick, think about what you said. Scenarios where I have all these picks that we've been talking about. If I lose one of the later round picks on top of Brandon Cooks, but in return I get, instead of that sixth round pick or fifth round pick, I get a chance now to talk about the top 125 or talk about a pick more in the third or fourth round that makes sense to me, it's worth doing for the totality of the whole deal. It's addition by subtraction.
But even if he's at that point, though, like, Caserio has to figure out a way to manage and massage that situation. That way he can create optimal value for Brandon Cooks.
But it's also encouraging the fact that he manipulated and managed a situation that looked unmanageable in the Deshaun Watson no trade. He should be able to figure out a way where he could possibly do this too. And that starts internally. Internally, they have to make the decision, is there a chance for one more second chance for Brandon Cooks or not? And then if not, we need to get on it as quickly as possible, trying to find out how do we move on from him, and not just move on from him, but benefit from moving on.
Yeah,
from
you
him.
Have to try to create some demand for him too, because you don't want to just give him away. I think it's something you can't afford to do with a good football player in the NFL, even though he had a drop in production. 713-780-3776. We're broadcasting live from Frankie's Italian Kitchen. We'll be here till 3. Personal pizzas for $9.75. Philly cheesesteak pizzas, all specialty type of pizzas, fish and chips, fish sandwich. It is Lynn season after all. We'll be here till 3. Will House will be here until 7 o'clock, though. So if you can't make it out this late lunch surge, head on out here for a little bit of dinner. Always fun with the Will House. Cody Stutz knows his food, too, so you can ask him about all the menu suggestions. All right, Bad Take Boulevard. Does Andrew Carlson make his debut on Bad Take Boulevard? We do it every Thursday at 2 o'clock. No. Who made the list this week? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.